morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team of Prudential Now Realty, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank our host and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how have you been?
Well, busy, and I think I finally cleaned out the last of the elephant ears.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yes, wasn't that. And I will admit, I had one myself. It's hard to go out there last week or the week before and really not get into one of those. So.
I had beer batter fries with sauce.
It's terrible.
I heard they had deep fried butter too.
Terrible, but amazing at the same time. So I know what you mean for sure. And I did. We talked about it on the show, and I did. I had a little bite myself, but I told my brother, I'll buy if you'll try, and he had deep fried butter.
Oh,
he went for it.
That's healthy.
So, yeah, it was definitely a great event. Always fun to be out there in the community. And just, I mean, you just see everybody, you know, out there and have a good time with the kids.
It's a great thing. You know, the whole town looks forward to going through it. Awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. But the big local news this week is moms, kids are back in school. So we're back into a little routine with all the schools starting up this last week. And I know it was kind of crazy at our house and, you know, new routines and kind of back in it. And we usually see on the real estate side of things, once people get back into that routine, we usually see a really big month, September, October, and the first part of November. So we're back extremely busy right now as people settle back into those routines and start looking for houses again. And as always, that's Mr. Tom Coyne, our resident in-house lending expert. So, Tom, everything else going good on your side of things?
Yeah, things are fantastic, Lance. It's been a good first part of the year, first half of the year. Everything's great.
Okay, fantastic. So we always like to start with our crazy residential real estate story. And I let my daughter pick this one out this week. I pulled them up. We were doing our research. And she said, she goes, $72.5 million, Dad, you have to use that one. So, you know, we've seen some big numbers on this show, but that's a big one. And it is Celine Dion's Jupiter Island Estate in Florida. So this is 6 acres with 400 linear feet of waterfront. And I believe this is why my daughter picked this out as a celebrity real estate news story. Its own water park is on site. So there's actually two houses on this property. One was bought for $12.5 million in 2004. Another one for $7 million back in 2008. Combined as a single 6-acre estate, redesigned, and then this huge water park put in. I mean, this place is crazy. It ought to be for $72 million, right? But when you look at this place, I mean, it is unreal. I'm shocked that somebody is not probably going to turn it into a resort. It looks like a resort as it is with the water slides and the wave pool. And I mean, this place, it's insane. It really is. So apparently, with Celine Dion spending a ton of time in Las Vegas with her recurring Las Vegas show and staple there, she also put another property back on the market that she has in Montreal. And so that one apparently had an offer on it, a $28 million property back there had an offer on it last week, according to the article. So from Zillow.com, that was a great article there, and we definitely had a kick looking through the pictures and stuff, and it's insane. So
that's what tells you Tri-Cities. We can't get a water park, but...
Yeah, she can.
Wow. Nice. That was a good one. I didn't put that one together. I'm glad we brought that one in today. So that was our crazy celebrity real estate story there. But one of the things, going back local, and Tom, you actually had picked the topic for this week's show, and I'm glad you did, is, you know, you and I had talked, and you had sent me a message and said, gosh, let's do the show on buying acreage properties. Let's talk about some of the land and buying acreage properties. And I kind of went back and thought that over the years, I don't think we've ever done that. And we recently have had some transactions with Acreage Properties, a lot of research on some different things. And so great, great timing to bring that up. And we've got some new lofts that really fit in there. So one of the things we came up with is talking about what to consider when you're buying either vacant land or acreage properties and what else you need to look at. Well, one of the things that is different is there's a lot more to consider. It gets a lot more complex cost-wise what to look at when you're looking at buying land. So, of course, the number one thing I wrote down is location. And this really, I mean, it's the same with houses and stuff, but when you have vacant land, it really takes it to a whole nother level. And one of the things that happens a lot of time is generally when you're looking at lots or you're looking at vacant land, you always get the question from folks, what's going to go back there in that vacant land behind my land? And I almost always, as a joke, my general response is a pig farm. And so, and people don't like that very well, but they always look at me. And I say that for shock value with clients because I want them to really consider the options. So, yeah, when someone asks me that question, I'm like, oh, I think I've heard like a pig slaughterhouse that's going in there.
Got to give them worst case.
And so, well, that's exactly right. And I say that kind of jokingly because it's a big deal. With vacant land, you don't know. I mean, it's not there yet.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to be there. And even after, we're going to talk about the show a little bit today. We're going to talk about the research that you can do to look into that, some of the things to think about. But one of the things that happens is you see these signs up all over town that say zoning change. You know, you look for the orange sign or pending land use action. So even if you think you know what's going to go there, it could get changed in the future because we can't predict what's going to happen, what motions might come forward, change in streets, change in use. When there's vacant land behind you, it is can be a great thing. And it can also be slightly concerning. And we've even had developers on the show talk about projects, about new projects going in. But sometimes those new projects back up to existing projects, looking at zoning changes, and boy, that causes a lot of heated feelings and discussions, we can say, between property owners about what's going to go on. So considering what could possibly go behind you and looking at the alternatives, location, location, location.
And not every vacant lot behind you has a sign that says future home of blank.
Right.
They don't always have that.
They don't always have that. And so it is a consideration of what could be built might not be what you want to be built. So you really have to look at that as a consideration. We're going to go over a lot of advantages, but that's one of the disadvantages, kind of the unknown. Now, on the flip side of that, I've had people buy next to open spaces, vacant fields, and they've lived in a house for 20 years, and they've loved not having a neighbor behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side of it, we've had that happen where you've bought vacant land, and the neighbor behind, you know, just puts up a huge shop and blocks your view, you know, because those covenants were different than your neighborhood. So, you know, you see it on both sides. Our job is to educate the consumer of what could happen, and then they can make a decision about that. The next thing I wrote down is when looking at vacant land, talking about lots is knowing the costs involved. I mean, there can become significant costs that come up when you're looking at vacant land. Starting all the way from the beginning with title insurance. A lot of times people consider title insurance on houses and their property. Vacant land, sometimes this gets skipped over. I've got a couple of examples from this last year where I've come across private party land transactions that did not have title insurance, and we found some issues with those later on. So making sure that you're considering title insurance, and then what comes with vacant land and title insurance, depending upon the size of it, if it's rural, if it has some acreage, to issue a title insurance policy on that land, many times that title company is going to require a survey. But I put survey as its own category for after the break because there's a lot of issues that can come up with that survey. So looking at a survey, looking at the title insurance, and then the big one that comes up with that is what is the utility situation with this land? What exactly is there? And in fact, Tom, I know you've developed land in the past, and I mean, what comes up? What are some of the things that comes up when you look at land?
You know, the first thing you always want to think about is, where am I going to get my power from?
That's exactly.
How much is that going to cost me? And we were just talking.
We were just talking.
In the middle of doing it on the vacation spot that I have for my family, and it's expensive to get power down there. And then, of course, where's water coming from? How deep do I need to drill a well? Where are the neighbors' wells located? How far away? How deep did they have to go?
I should have had you do the show today. So one of the things you just brought up, like five like amazing points. Where's the power at? And so a lot of times, you know, you see those green boxes. I don't know the exact feet, and it varies, but you know, every 500 feet or every 600 feet, you've got to have a new green box, you know. And I'm sorry, I'm not an electrician. I call it a booster because, you know, you got to get the power
out there.
So transformer is probably the technical term. But let me tell you, those aren't free. Last time I heard, somebody looked into the cost of that. So if you want to put your house or at the very back of a big piece of acreage property that you're dealing with, there's going to be additional cost to get that power back to the back corner to build that house there. So where are the utilities at? Where's your potential house site going to be? And then how much is it going to cost to get the utilities to there? The other thing to consider about that is road. If you go to the back corner of a property or you have 20 acres and you're going to the back 5 acres, you're probably going to then go into a private road scenario or a private driveway scenario. And what are the costs going to be with that driveway? Do you cross any drainage easements? And do those drainage easements then require culverts to be put in by the county regulations and what's happening? So looking at your placement on that land with in conjunction with the utility costs are going to be huge. And that is definitely, definitely something to know about. And like you said, it adds up quickly. I think all the times we've done it in the past, you know, we're working off of a spreadsheet and you start plugging those numbers in and getting those bids. And sometimes that number at the bottom gets a little scary.
Well, these are all things to look into before you ever put pen to paper and actually write a contract.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. And one of the beauties of our vacant land contracts in the state of Washington, so a great tool that we use, is they have a built-in feasibility study. And it's a really comprehensive feasibility. So when you write a contract on land or vacant land or acreage, you want to have that feasibility study in there. And you can fill in the number of days that you want, 30, 45, 60 days, to go out and do this research. Based upon those costs, and hence feasibility, if it's feasible for you to continue and you want to continue, you can. If you thought, though, your well was going to be $10,000 and you get an estimate that it's going to be $15,000 or $20,000, that might blow the budget on the build cost, and you'll want to be able to cancel that contract and get your earnest money back. So making sure that you're using this information to help during your feasibility study is a huge, huge part of the process. So once again, when we do these shows like this, we get super excited because you and I have been through the process. I've now gotten through two of my 10 points that I wrote down for the 30-minute show. But we're coming up on our first break. We're going to have our break. We're going to talk to Tom about some financing. And if I know how these things go, we're going to get to three more of my 10 points. And we'll have to do another show on that later.
Reason for people to call.
Fantastic. Absolutely. We'll be right back.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been here talking about land development, things to consider when buying vacant land, acreages, that just that gem of a vacant lot you've had your eye on in that development that never got developed. looking into why maybe it didn't get developed and some of the costs associated with that, or why it might be a great idea to do it now. So before we kind of delve into a little bit of information like that, though, Tom, what's going on the lending side over there with you at Sterling?
Well, lot loans for vacant properties are pretty tough to come by. There's very few people in town that offer them. We actually don't do lot loans.
Gotcha. And that's one of the things, yeah, it's changed a lot the last couple of years.
It really has. You know, a lot of people, when they go and buy a vacant property, they try to do private financing with the seller, or they pay cash, or maybe they do a home equity loan on their current primary residence, or we can do them as a part of a construction loan.
Gotcha.
So, a little bit tougher there because you have to have all your construction docs all in a row and ready to go to be able to package it up as one loan. But a lot of times when I'm involved in a property that has multiple acres is when someone's out buying an existing home that's already on property. And a lot of times when these people are looking for the property with acreage, they find manufactured homes.
Huge, yeah. We find that, I come across this a lot. We resell those. We do that quite a bit.
You know, and that's even more especially true in, say, $200,000 or less. If someone's wanting, say, 3 to 5 acres, they're going to find a lot of manufactured homes. And I wanted to talk about the rules and restrictions that come along with manufactured because they are completely different than, say, a stick-built home. The reason being there's a little more stringent rules and restrictions is they pose a little more risk to a lender because the resale isn't as strong on manufactured homes, and they generally don't appreciate as well as, say, a stick-built home does. A manufactured home comes in on wheels, so because it's on the road, it has to come in on a vehicular title. That title is then eliminated once the property is placed on the parcel, and it becomes all a part of the parcel. That's what we call a title elimination, and we require that on every transaction.
Has to be done. Yeah, we run into that all the time. That's one of our first questions we ask when we go out to list a manufactured home.
Right. So that's on any loan program we do manufactured. Has title been eliminated? If it hasn't, it's got to be done. But here are some of the requirements we have for manufactured homes. On a conventional loan, and I know we've talked about this a lot, it's by far the best loan program to go with, conventional as you can qualify, a borrower has to put 20% down on a manufactured home. So conventional is the best way to finance a manufactured home because there's no upfront mortgage insurance, no monthly mortgage insurance, a little bit easier guidelines.
Hold on. Back up here. Yeah. Okay. This is real life stuff. I run into this all the time. Couple goes in with a loan officer, gets pre-approved. For $200,000. Love, we're out looking at homes. All of a sudden, they see a manufactured. They love it. They're like, Lance, we want to write the offer. I'm like, okay, great. You've got your down payment and everything. Oh, yeah. We met with our lender. 5% down. We have it. I'm like, no, hold the, stop the bus. Now, we were looking at stick builds. You were pre-approved. Have you told your lender now that this house we found that you loved is a manufactured? Then I get this kind of glazed over look, and they're like, no, we haven't. You're saying, so like when you do now, they thought they were only going to have to put 5% down. They were approved on a conventional. And what you just, I didn't want you to skip over it because this is real life what happens.
Yeah.
You're saying now in that $200,000 house, they were going to be putting $10,000 down. Now you're saying they need 40.
Correct. Yeah, conventional loans, manufactured loans, full 20% down.
Gotcha. So, big difference.
Oh,
$10,000 to $40,000 last time I balanced was a big difference.
Yeah. And it's part of the reason why some people just won't buy a manufactured home because the restrictions are tougher. So there is definitely that to look into if you're looking at manufactured.
Gotcha.
On a conventional loan, it's going to require more money down. Other than that, guidelines remain about the same. Interest rate's probably 0.5% more than what it would be on a stick build. Not too big of a deal. However, most people, Lance, like you said, don't have 20% down to put down on one of these homes. That's why the majority of the loans we do for manufactured homes are on FHA loans.
Gotcha.
Now, on FHA, we only require 3.5% down of the sales price. So if you have a sales price of $100,000, they need to put $3,500 down. The main downside to FHA, I know we've talked about this a lot on past shows, in comparison to conventional, is that the monthly mortgage insurance is extremely high. It's one of the highest of any loan program out there. On a $200,000 loan, a person can expect to pay about $225 a month for mortgage insurance to FHA. With the new changes that FHA just had in June, that mortgage insurance never goes away. Also, the client pays upfront mortgage insurance as well. So neither of these fees are on the 20% down conventional loan. A lot of times when I tell people that they just want to put maybe 5% down and they're looking for manufactured, I show them the FHA and say, okay, well, this is what you're going to have to get if you don't want to put 20% down. They say, no, I don't want that loan program. I'll find Stickville.
Right.
And on acreage properties, it's just going to take you a little bit more time to find something in those, say, 200,000 or less price range that has some acreage with it.
No, it does for sure. And a lot of times, you know, even with that being the case and those more costs, when we get a property, say it has a shop on acreage manufactured, those go really fast. So, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of times they're going, you know, they're going with FHA and paying the increased cost. But a lot of times they're not, you know. You brought up a great point. Is that, and that really, really affects the decision on the type of home you're buying.
It does. Now, on FHA loans, we also have to do an engineer certification. That's when a licensed engineer goes out and certifies the foundation and makes sure it was installed according to HUD's requirements. On conventional, we don't require these. FHA, we do. That just leads to additional costs for an FHA loan. Now, there is a zero-down program for manufactured homes.
What?
VA.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay, you were throwing me a loop. You did almost stump me for a second there. You need to warn me about this off air. I almost fell out of my chair there. I was like, okay, but VA, I do know about that. Yes.
So, of course, if you're an eligible veteran, you have a certificate of eligibility through the VA, we can do a manufactured home with zero down. So it's a great option.
Gotcha.
Now, some of the other restrictions that apply to all loan programs that we do, conventional, VA, FHA, you got to have a 660 credit score. It's got to be a double wide or triple wide, so no single wides. Big thing, it's got to be built after June 15th of 1976.
Huge, yep.
HUD really stepped up their requirements that builders had to comply by on June 15th, 1976. So we will only insure homes that are built after that. Got to be attached to a permanent foundation. No second moves. Very, very important.
Huge important. I've ran into this before.
So the home has to come from the dealership to the lot, and that it can't move again. If it's moved the second time, we won't finance that second move. There may be lenders out there. I don't think any local lenders will do it. So that's something important to look at. Anything that's attached to the property, like, say, a porch or an addition, it has to be self-supporting, and if it's not, it's got to be inspected by LNI. You've got to prove that you got your permit, it's been inspected, and everything complies with the LNI regulation. Now, if you are looking at a stick-built home with acreage, you can throw basically all those guidelines out the window. It's going to be like every other transaction. A couple things we're going to look at is, are there comparable properties? You don't have a maximum amount of acreage that you can finance as long as there's comparables out there to support it. If you're trying to buy 25 acres, there's only 4-acre comps out there, we're going to have an issue with it. We also don't want to see that those acres can be subdivided because that turns it into an income-producing property, which we won't allow. Now, there can't be any farming on it. You can't be raising pigs or anything.
So, Thanks. Way to wrap it back, circle back around to my example.
But as long as it's not an income-producing property and there's comps, we're going to treat stick-built homes just like we would basically any other home.
Oh, that's fantastic. So that's good. That is valuable, valuable information. And I can think of 4 or 5 transactions in the last 2 months where we've ran across all of those points and really deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's great information that you brought up that then relates right back to what I wrote down about the land purchases is zoning restrictions, ordinance, and covenants. So you really need to pay attention. You might have plans of putting a manufactured home on the land that you're buying. Well, you really need to research if that's going to be allowed. Is there any covenants, CC&Rs, commonly known as CC&Rs, that run with the land that are going to prevent that from happening or allow that to happen? So that is a huge, huge thing to consider when you're looking at that. The other thing to really think about, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, is the road access. A lot of times taking a good look at, is the road graveled? Is it paved? Can it be? And then who maintains that? Does that road cross multiple properties? And then is there a road maintenance agreement in place?
Or, Lance, another thing, easements?
Yes.
Someone have an easement across your property so they can access theirs?
Yeah, that's a huge one, because when we look into that with those easements is, and I have written that down, you're right on top of it. So is there an easement across your property that allows another property owner behind you to access that? Or, for instance, is there a landlocked parcel behind you that potentially has been accessed in the past? And then when you purchase the property, would that shut them out and they might be able to then look at an easement? I have to be very careful, because if I go much further in that discussion, it rolls into real estate law, and that is not where my license covers. So when you get to easements, that's why I'm like, why is Lance stopping talking on the radio? Not a great idea. I'm like, okay, because if I say five more words, we're practicing law. So when you get into questions about easements, what you can do, future easements, that's when you really need to talk to a real estate attorney. Mm-hmm. And then they can give you legal advice about how those easements work, what could happen potentially. And it's really important, especially if you're doing those handshake agreements with a neighbor. If you're like, oh, yeah, sure, you can come across my land and access your lot back there. And then 4 years later, what happens is that neighbor, say, you probably don't think anything will ever happen, but say that neighbor gets sick or has to move back east, you know, to deal, maybe take care of his parents or help out. All of a sudden, he sells that lot, and when the process of selling that lot, he tells the new owner, oh, yeah, I've always just used Jim and Sandy's lot. Just continue to drive across it. And then the next thing you know, he's raving in and out of there. He's not nearly as nice as the previous owner. It just causes all kinds of trouble, and you try to cut off access. You might have a problem with that. So there are so many of those things. It's best to why everybody is amicable and why everybody agrees, have an attorney make that legal.
Get it right.
And that really, they have, they're just, that's what they do every day and specialize in. And they're really good at thinking about scenarios that we never think about. That always shocks me. That must be a class that attorneys take, you know, is what could happen.
Things that shock you.
Yeah, so it's really good when dealing with those easements to get those solidified and speak with an attorney. The other thing that we do run across that you have to consider around here is flooding. When you really look at some properties that are down against the Yakima and some of those areas, you really have to look at the flood history there. And then more so, too, how much flood insurance is going to be to cover that.
And if it's financeable.
If it's even financeable. Many times it's not.
We put the brakes on a loan if it's in a flood zone until we find out.
Exactly.
Can we do this loan? Is it financeable because of the flood insurance? Lance, if anything on this show, we went through so much stuff, and I think it's a great show to do just because I think people who thought, maybe I'd just go find a lot and buy it, and great. There's so much that goes into it.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about. So, of course, because of the show, I've got to pick three, and it's all land.
Mm-hmm.
So here's where we're at. We've got a lot. We were selling a subdivision out Badger Canyon. This is the last lot left in that subdivision. This is Lot 11 out of Country Heights. It is a 2.2-acre lot, and it is for sale right now for $62,500. It's been significantly reduced over the last couple of months. It's the last lot in that development, and it truly is a lot in an area of million-dollar homes. There are some big houses out there around great value. It will need some of the things that we talked about in this show to look into. There's some utility considerations, some well-depth considerations. We've got all that information, but it is a great opportunity for somebody to get a fantastic lot in just a gorgeous, gorgeous neighborhood out there in Badger Canyon. Funny enough, the second is also in Badger Canyon. We just listed a 1.25-acre lot on Private Road 887. This is a beautiful, beautiful building lot, great amount of acreage, and it is also listed in that same price point of $60,000. And so we have had a ton of action and calls on that the last couple of days. I really expect that lot to sell in the next 3 to 4 days. So if you've been looking for an acre out in Badger Canyon at this price point of $60,000, fantastic, fantastic deal. The last one that I put down is we have a 2 1/4 acre flat piece right out by Red Mountain off of SR 224. And this is a great opportunity. That's a growing area out there. A lot happening with the wine industry. So to get 2 1/4 acres out there, flat, ready to go for building, perfect for maybe potential kind of that gentleman farms with the wine grapes out there. And that is priced at $85,000. So we've got, just like we talked about on the show, we've got 3 great examples of some land, and then we can talk about all of the things that you would need to do, the considerations that we went over on the show. And so that's our pick 3, and that kind of wraps up our show about land. And like I said, I got through about 6 of the 10, so I feel pretty good.
Lance, I got 3 more pages of info here.
Well, we'll come back to this. We'll circle back to this topic in a couple weeks. Super excited. Don't miss next week. It's our annual Parade of Homes show. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Jeff Lowe, the executive director of the HBA, back in here. That's right, folks. It's coming up. We're going to be right into Parade of Homes season, and we're excited for our show next week.
And we'll be back on News Talk 870.